and gentlemen, you are listening to Drive Through HR, and we just had a fantastic Twitter chat, culture chat, hashtag culture chat. Y'all should check this stuff out. It was awesome. I think the folks at Goodco are going to put a Storify together so you can go back and look at it if you didn't get to participate. It's just good stuff. It's good to talk about culture. We've got Nisha and I have a wonderful guest on today. Samir, how are you doing, brother?
Good, William. How are you? Happy to be here.
Hi, I'm doing well. And you are in Vegas, is that correct?
I find myself in Vegas, fortunately or unfortunately. We're actually here for a few client meetings.
Well, you know what? Here's the deal. We can't talk much about what you're doing in Vegas because that's the rule, right? You can't give us too many details. We don't want those details. But anyhow, glad to hear your voice. I think we had a really successful culture chat. But let's back up for just a second. Nisha, are you on the line and can you hear me?
Yeah, yes, William. And hi, Samir. Glad to talk to you.
Hey, Nisha. Nice speaking with you, too. And thank you for all the promotion and help you guys and all the work you guys put in with the culture chat.
Yeah, that was
fantastic.
I think that was well executed. We'll all pat ourselves on the back for the next 10 minutes. No, I'm just kidding. do us a favor, Samir, introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about yourself and your company.
Sure. I'm the co-founder and CEO of Good.co. We're a small San Francisco-based, you know, partly stereotypical Silicon Valley startup, if you will, and we've been around for 18 months. And Goodco really is, think of us as quantified self for teams, right? We help people identify their strengths, see how they, based on sort of quantitative insights that are masked with these really fun OkCupid type quizzes, help them understand what their strengths are, how they can work better with other people, answer questions about others, and take those same quizzes about companies. And essentially, it's a way to quantify and provide a framework for culture fit and personality.
Awesome. What is keeping your prospects and customers up at night?
You know, the biggest thing I hear every day is, you know, everyone talks about how important culture is, and there's a ton of research around how millennials, specifically millennials, you know, the 7 out of the top 10 factors that are important to them are related to culture. And companies talk about it, but I think a lot of leaders understand also that at this point it's still a little bit of lip service because culture is a little bit vague, undefined, so everyone talks about it, but nobody really knows how to best quantify it or measure it specifically when you're hiring people for fit to the teams that they'd be working in, not just the overall company culture. So the good thing is there's a lot of conversation about it, and there's interesting approaches at doing that in a more authentic, ground-up manner. And that's similar to what Goodco is doing as well. So that's what we've heard is one of the biggest concerns as a way to, you know, put some metrics and quantified measures around culture and how you make it better. Because even if you're doing it well, it's hard to know that you're doing it well if there are no measures around it.
What's, for the audience, what's the relationship between culture and values and engagement for your customers?
You know, at heart, those are all sort of complementary subjects. So for our customers, what is valuable is the more conversations you're driving between people and employees within a company, the better employees understand themselves, the better they understand each other's strengths and weaknesses and attitudes and motivations and values, right? And that allows them, even if that just builds more empathy and allows them to work better with each other, both to their strengths and weaknesses, right? And the more employees are engaged with each other, the more teams collectively come together as a cohesive, compatible unit. And we see a lot of the focus in large organizations move more consciously towards teams. Teams are becoming sort of the central currency of operation. Whether, you know, you're a 10-person startup in San Francisco or you are a 15-person innovation team at a large company like IBM, teams really become that central currency and that basic unit of operation. And organizations are now focusing on making those teams really optimized, both from a skill, attitude alignment, motivation, and values perspective. to build stronger, more collaborative units, because then when people do know each other, they take personal interest in their lives, and that, you know, having a good friend at work has shown to increase both engagement and people stay longer and more productive and happier. That really builds the core of that culture that you can then draw from and map out to the entire, to the larger organization unit.
That's totally true. Well, in fact, every team has its own team dynamics and its own micro culture based on who the manager would be and who the team members would be. So, Samir, it would be really great if you can talk a little bit about, you know, how do we make sure that all of that mini micro teams culture are totally aligned with the organization's overall culture?
It's a good question. The short answer is I don't think each microculture needs to be totally aligned with the overall organization culture, quite frankly. And mm-hmm. we see this all the time in our client discussions and speaking with people. So imagine your customer support team in a company. So I want to use the example of, say, a company, Acme, for example, right? They have, like, 10 core values that are super important, and it's shown to really be the rallying cry of the organizations. And those 10 core values absolutely should be exhibited by the employees of the company. But not each team or level or unit or kind of role will exhibit those same values at the same levels, right? What we've learned is that there are certain values that are best aligned with certain roles. And say customer support, it's really important to have a high focus on being empathetic than being highly innovative, for example, right? I mean, you could be innovative, and that could be somewhat of a minor factor of your personality. But in your engineering lab, for example, you want to make sure that people have a pretty high index of innovativeness, and especially when they come together in the team as a unit. So I think that the level that teams exhibit those overall cultural values of the company could vary, and it should, because otherwise you'll have just identical sort of matchstick men as everyone in your company. So I think those differences are just as valuable as the commonalities, because that's when complementariness within a team really brings things together.
Wonderful. You know, as an HR professional, we normally hear, like, everybody saying HR is hiring, HR is making the hiring decision. Of course, we do have a say when it comes to deciding whether that person's personality fits to the organization's culture or not. But the truth is the hiring decisions are taken by the managers in an organization. So it's really critical that a manager should know how to assess a candidate and how to assess the right fit. So I've gone through the Twitter stream. It's a fantastic conversation that you guys have had. Unfortunately, I couldn't attend. But taking from that, one thought is, how do we make sure those managers are making the right decision at the front end?
You know, that's a really good point. I think managers tend to have multiple data points. So managers are sort of mini CEOs of a company, right? They're responsible for the team's success, because if the team is successful, they're successful. Obviously, retention is a pretty massive criteria. Their ability to attract high-quality talent is a very good criteria. And the managers that you see that work best, and I think recently Google came out and said, and they had this research which said that a lot of the criteria that they were looking at and using to hire their candidates over the last 10 years wasn't very accurate. GPAs weren't a very good indicator of on-the-job success. Neither were skills or the school you went to. What really mattered is how you got along with your immediate team, but more specifically, they found that the manager's fit with his or her own team was primarily the biggest indicator of on-the-job of success of the team and how well they would do. So what we've seen is, like, managers that work as mini CEOs of their organizations, but more importantly, are empowered to play that role by the leadership of the company, whether it's HR or, you know, the CEO of the company. It's about having that autonomy to wane, because, you know, you have multiple data points in your head and you know sort of having worked with people on your team, what their strengths and weaknesses are. I mean, to be able to make those decisions, but more importantly, managers also have the ability to, we've seen that they, when they rely on their own team and their perspective on sort of fit and how you hire, and you can't necessarily get involved, like interview like 100 candidates for a position. But a manager getting feedback from and getting part of his team involved in the process is actually, we've seen work really well. And some of the best organizations actually encourage that and have built processes that, one, empower manager, and two, allow managers to sort of have their team weigh into the process, because at the end of the day, people join and leave teams, not companies.
Let's go broader real quickly on the talent acquisition side. What's culture's role in talent acquisition and recruiting?
You know, I would say there are a few things. I mean, we've been talking about that war for talent for a long time, right? And there is somewhat of a war for talent, and there isn't. I mean, it really matters on if you're on the surface, it seems like if you're at the right place at the right time, like you're going to be able to attract culture. So I've seen companies that actually have no problem hiring the kind of roles and positions that most people complain how difficult it is to hire for. And I think the primary role for culture is to build a rallying cry for the organization that gives everyone a sort of unified voice and an approach and a direction that they're looking towards. It gives people a sense of ownership, and it really helps with the decision-making process, as we've seen. So think of sort of culture as your internal brand in many ways. So there's an external brand that the company expresses to its customers and users and whatnot, but there is an internal brand promise that you keep to your employees that really builds that core of why people are here. Why are they here beyond just the paycheck? You know, everything else being the same, will they still be here in this company working for several years if the paycheck in any other company was exactly the same, right? So I think that internal brand is really important at driving that organization forward. But more importantly, I think that also builds the core unit of your company that you can then hire for fit in terms of, you know, bringing on new employees and hiring for new sort of new areas and talent. And, you know, being able to attract this high-quality, high-fit candidates also becomes such a heavy duty responsibility of a strong culture. And when you have that, you don't have to work hard at expressing it. It just becomes part of who you are. That culture gets expressed across all your touch points, whether it's internally or externally, and it's sort of the core of how you build both a brand that retains employees, keeps them happier and more productive, and also is able to just attract employees. I mean, at the end of the day, like references from your internal employees or how you express yourself as an employer brand has a massive impact on your ability to attract new people.
All right, so you know that Zappos gets touted in HR and recruiting as the example, and probably rightfully so. I want you to, from your perspective, what does Zappos get right from a culture perspective? Why are they a great example?
Sure. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think Zappos is probably one of five companies that's a great example. Not because, you know, they've done things that have gotten them PR and, you know, they're bold about their approach to talent management and acquisition and things like that. I think they've just consistently done that, and that innovation is just part of their HR DNA in many ways, right? So they don't shy away from experimenting because they know that not all experiments are going to succeed, right? But they have a pretty good ratio of experiments succeeding. And I think they've sort of stayed ahead of the curve in that way. And that's what people identify with. So they are able to identify with the right people that fit with that Zappos experimentative culture. That's one. And I think they really do heavily invest in HR as a function. Right, I mean, they really do take that seriously. They start engaging with early-stage startups very, very early because that's where a lot of the innovation in HR and recruiting is happening. And, you know, getting that perspective early on allows them to kind of stay out of the curve as well. So I think just overall, they've sort of embedded that culture of innovation in their DNA as part of that HR and recruiting group and their team. They do a ton of different stuff, and they try a few different things across all different ends, and I think a lot of those things work out. I mean, recently we made that decision about the new job board they launched without any job listings. It might be radical and not even be right for a lot of other companies out there, but it's right for Zappos.
That's totally right. So, Summer, let's give a quick shout-out to all those participants that have joined on our culture chat. And everybody, you are listening to Drive Through HR. William and I are talking to our wonderful guest, Samir Burwatkar, who is the CEO of Good.co. And we just had a fantastic conversation on Twitter, hashtag culture chat. Look out for that and look out for the Storify to get all the updates. So, Samir, going back to one of your points that you have discussed in the beginning, that is the metrics and measurements on culture, which is really interesting to hear. So basically, you know, organization who does have a great culture, but at that point, how do they measure it? How do they understand, yes, we are going on a right path?
I think the most macro metric is, you know, how long people stayed at your company. And that, at the end of the day, says a lot about why people are there and, you know, how well the company is doing. And obviously, there's, like, the business metrics that bear into it. Just how successful the company is it meeting its business objectives and things like that. But I think the way to measure it in our minds is, one, like, focusing on the team as a central unit of operation. And using metrics within that team, both in terms of how they set their success criteria and how they meet them over time and how long people really stay there. Because at the end of the day, even when you're hiring new employees, the goal is to reduce churn, right? When you hire people that are culturally aligned with your team and your organization's vision, right, they'll stay longer, which is, again, related to churn. So even when you're recruiting for culture fit, the main sort of central unit that most things should align around is how long people stay within teams. And if there is sort of the right mechanisms in place to, one, help them sort of learn and progress the career, because as we've seen in a ton of research, it points to learning as being a really important metric for teams and people both. Right, and when people feel like they're learning more and they're moving forward in their career and their life and they're having the right opportunities in their companies, right, they tend to stay longer, be happier, and be more productive. So it's those opportunities for growth and success within the organization. So internal career pathing and how easily or flexible a company is in allowing people to kind of move through the ranks or move through teams or do a few different things also is a really important metric. So these are some of the things we've seen that companies that actually do well on culture, and that bleeds into their overall business metrics and profit and revenue and growth and acquisitions and things like that. They do a few of these basic things really well, which is like empowering people, being flexible, making learning a really important criteria and a metric, even internally within a company, and, you know, putting budgets against it. Because a lot of times, you know, you would spend a lot of money hiring the best talent, but if you're not investing in that employee and the growth and the progress, like no matter how smart or how brilliant or how culturally aligned that person is, if there isn't a sense of moving forward and progress, especially with millennials today, they're not going to last.
Interesting. So let's talk about toxic work culture, or probably the bad work culture, if you can. So how do they go about fixing it?
You know, I think the core is really to be honest with yourself. And a lot of times, and we've seen this, and the Good.co, for example, came about, right, because of our own, me and my co-founder, Sue, our own personal and professional experiences. And you can call it toxic. I think toxic, in my mind, is just not, like, right for me or right for you, or right for that specific person. So we truly believe that there is no such thing as a bad employer or a bad employee. When things don't work out, it's primarily because of bad fit. And we've seen that a lot. We've seen that when we've hired people, although we sort of obviously really focus pretty heavily on culture and the whole quantified way of assessing culture fit to team. But we've quit on a couple of occasions. And even from that experience, we've seen that, you know, they may actually call a company's culture toxic, but what I would say is primarily because it wasn't the right fit for them. But there are others, for example, in the job that I took up last before I started Good.co, it seemed like a great opportunity externally. And I, like any reasonably intelligent person, I did my research about it, right? But sure enough, 3 or 4 weeks in a job, I realized it's not the right fit for me. It was a very, you know, it was a very coveted company that many people would kill to work for. It just wasn't right for me. And so I think that toxicity has too much baggage of negativity in some ways, but in our mind, it's just like if companies are really true and honest themselves, it's not just what they say on their About Us page and their employer section, and more often than not, that ends up reflecting their vision of who they want to be, not who they are currently. So it again, becomes a little bit of, you know, wishful thinking in a way. But the true way to sort of decode what your company culture is, and for that matter, how toxic it may or may not be for the people that are on your company right now, is like really this bottom-up engagement-driven approach to identifying and decoding culture. And not just the overall cultural map of the company, but also how it is specifically on teams and how teams exhibit those cultural traits and how different or how common they are with the overall company's culture map. And more importantly, like, you know, decoding like for which teams, which attributes are really important and tracking it back to performance metrics, how long have people been around, like internal 360-degree reviews and mapping that all back to like then creating a cultural footprint and a map essentially that makes your both engagement and internal culture optimization as well as hiring for culture fit easier down the road.
All right. This is an easy one for you. Person's new to the company, HR leader is new to the company. They get in, they find out culture's not right, need to change it, need to fix it. What's the first two or three things that they should do once they realize that they have to change the culture?
You know, I think there were some really interesting tactics suggested during our culture chat. And I think when someone's new joining the company, I think it's like really understanding the authentic feedback that's coming from the bottom up. The culture is not just broken. It's like you hear from a couple of people that it's broken, right? I mean, you might be hearing it from people that are not good fits for that company's culture or that team's environment, right? But even small informal exercises, right? Like running these quizzes or like simple email-based quizzes that are done on a weekly basis that everyone responds to. Like how many people's first names do you know, for example, someone suggests in the culture chat. I thought that was brilliant, right? I mean, if you don't know a lot of first names in the company that you work in, there's an indicator that there's a serious problem with things. So I think just informally, there is a bunch of tactics like that, like just promoting sort of dedicated times and with teams just getting together and for us, it's like really decoding, like if there is a big problem, what is that problem? Where does it lie? And I think from there on, there's like more formal ways of doing that too, right? The shameless plug for GitCo. GitCo is a good way to sort of drive more conversations between people to help them understand each other by taking these fun quizzes. But at the same time, all that data gives you a really good underpinning of what your team's and company's culture map is as a head of HR or an executive. That tells you whether, you know, what the cultural alignment is within teams, what is the fit is with each team and people and how they map with the overall organization culture. But before any of that, I think the important thing is to use some, you know, interesting sort of informal just hacks, so if you will, right? Using some of these hacks to decode, like, is that truly a problem? If the participation rate for anything you're trying to do is abysmal, right, that, again, is a really good sign that there's a problem with the culture.
And I want you, in the next 5 minutes, I want you to put on your futurist hat here. If we go forward, let's just say 10 years, what's next in culture?
Wow. I don't know if you want to hear all my crazy ideas. I can get pretty off the wall about this.
Bring it.
All right. I think job listings themselves are horribly broken, and they're not something that express a company's personal brand, express a company's brand, and more importantly, the needs of the hiring manager, right? I think some of that is changing, and job listings themselves are not, I think, that are not needed, but I think they lack differentiation. So how would you know whether, like, a marketing person in company A is different from like the same marketing title in company B. Essentially, they both look like the same two-page job listings, right? So I think we've solved to a large degree and maybe even oversolved the sourcing problem, which is the internet and the transparency that it affords has solved the sourcing problem, right? It's become so easy to apply for jobs. But the thing is, we sort of lack tools right now to identify, okay, if someone is applying to a job, like what are the factors that truly make them a good fit for this specific job? We still, I think, over rely on sort of keywords and skills and sort of resume parsing, which is obviously definitely needed. But I think we struggle with sort of layering in these factors that we all know are important, but we haven't really sort of gotten past the esoteric nature of it. So the way I see the future, I think your teams themselves or the talent on your team, which is sort of the biggest asset that companies have, become the first or the best sort of line of defense in a way to both attract and find fit with high-quality talent, right? And by high-quality talent, I mean it's like talent that is specifically fit to that team's or attitude and culture and motivation and skills. So I think so job listings themselves, I think, need to evolve significantly, and I imagine they will, because just like text-based job listings, it's just not smart. It doesn't help the employees because they feel like they need to apply to as many jobs as they can. Companies feel like they need to attract as many candidates as they can. So there isn't like appropriate filters in between to make job matching better. So I think teams and showcasing the human capital on the team and sort of building that transparency and finding fit is, in my mind, going to become a pretty sort of transformative way of both attracting and finding fit with high-quality talent. So I think there are two or three different sort of things in there that I see changing. And I think the second thing I would mention is that I think there is a greater balance between employees and employers and sort of the value exchange that happens. I mean, we're not in the old world anymore where employers are, you know, we're giving you money and you come work your 8 hours a day, right? I think employers recognize that you need to do more than that, because if you want the right people, the smart people that are culturally aligned and are dedicated at working at your company, just the 8 hours is not enough. It's like when you actually even just spend 8 hours and you really believe in what you do, you're like 2x more productive. So I think companies realize that that exchange and balance is now just in as much favor of employees as it is for employers, right? Like just the nature of work is changing and going through a pretty big transformation right now. So I think companies that are at the leading edge are recognizing that more and are doing more than just like positioning their job as just about a paycheck.
That is absolutely a truth that Samir has said right now. A paycheck is not enough. So, Samir, we are about to wrap up the show. Thank you so much for being with us today and for giving us an opportunity to join you guys over Culture Chat on Twitter. And so,
thank you, guys. This was great.
Appreciate it. So, where can our audience connect with you and find out more details about what you do?
They could just go to our site, www.good.co. We recently released sort of our primary product that we learned from a lot from our web beta product we launched about 9 or 10 months ago, which was a really good success. And we launched it on the iOS, our mobile app, a month ago. And we're soon releasing it on Android. And you can find more information on our methodology and our science and approach and all sort of the craziness on our website, good.co, or on our Twitter handle, in good co.
All right. So thanks, everyone, for tuning into Drive Through HR, and I appreciate your tweets, retweets, and all the social shares and all the love that you do for Drive Through HR. So we will talk to you all next week, and wish you all a wonderful weekend.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks, Samir. Thanks, William. Thank you.